This question comes from the audience. Superintendent Hargens recommended not to increase taxes this year. Can you explain why you do or do not agree with the decision?
I haven't voted for taxes the last 2 years, and I didn't in 2010, and I think the year after that was compensating. I think when we have a budget and we have a fund balance, and we need to look at the budget like we look at our home budget. Can we afford it? Can families afford it? No, families can't. That's one thing I've really heard. They didn't feel like they wanted to raise the school taxes. It's not that they don't support public schools. It's just that they felt like they just didn't need it, and we had the money. I think the audit was a part of it, but we showed that we could balance it, and we are using some of our reserves. Now, next year it might be a different story because we have to pay a 2% raise to teachers and everybody next year, which will be $13 million. And when you put the steps in, that's another $11 million, which is $24 million. And the state only gives us $3.4 million to do that. So we have put so much into the schools, we're going to have to look and see what else we can do. And will we have to make cuts? We don't know that. We've been very fortunate. We have not had to do that because we have a super CFO who has really kept it, kept us where we needed to be. And we have a fund balance, which is really unusual in this day and time.
Thank you. Same question. Did you support her decision to raise, or excuse me, to not recommend a tax increase?
Dr. Hargens made the right decision when she took the tax increase, the property tax increase, off the table. There was a fund balance. And the schools are not underfunded, as we're seeing as more and more data is coming out. Some of the newer members of the school board have been asking the CFO to be more innovative and more transparent in some of the reporting as a direct result of the audit. And I think as we've seen the budget booklet that came out this year, it was a very, very different story than budget presentations we have seen in the past. And what it showed is that we did not need the funds this year. She was right to take it off the table, and I would not have voted for a property tax increase this year.
And we'll stay with you for the next question. This can be up to 2 minutes. What could be done to better support behavior and discipline issues inside schools?
It's a great question for a psychologist, right? Absolutely. I think some of the issues we see has to do with the student-teacher ratios. The more students teachers have to deal with, the less they're able to deal with students one-on-one, to recognize problems early on before they escalate into real concerns, real disruptions in the classroom. So we need smaller class sizes. We also, I think the move to put mental health counselors in the schools this year was an excellent one. I absolutely support that. I'm interested to see the data and how that looks, but I'm feeling very optimistic about that decision. I think school staff in general, not only the teachers, but school-wide, staff need to be trained to recognize early warning signs, to recognize when a student may be in trouble, and to intervene early on. And we can also partner with community organizations. I've worked with Peace Education Program in the past with anger management classes in the schools. There's also the CHOICE program. There are a number of community organizations that bring great resources into our schools. We need to continue and beef up those partnerships as we move forward to make sure that our students are safe, that they are, that behavior issues are often a manifestation of problems going on at home, and students need to be safe when they come to school. That needs to be a safe place for them and to be their home.
Ms. Haddad, same question. What could be done to better support behavior and discipline issues?
Well, we are looking at that. We are trying some new programs. We have student response teams that if a child gets out of control, they have teams that go into the schools and try to help them and bring them out of the classroom. We're trying to cut back on suspensions for some of the issues that don't need to be suspended as much. So we're bringing people in to help to work with those students. Seven counties, we've had them in our schools for a long time, and they are wonderful to help one-on-one with our children. We did put the mental health counselors in this year because when I went to visit my schools, what the principals were telling me that the kindergarten were the problems, and when we start having kindergartners being our problems, we got a lot of problems. So we listened to what the principals had to say, so we got the mental health counselors. We have these response teams that go in and help, And there are times that students will have to be suspended. But we are looking at ways that they won't keep the other kids from learning, that they will be pulled out and work with as an individually and then sent back in, but not be sending them home for a vacation.
Staying with you up to 2 minutes for this question, what are some of the issues specific to District 6?
Well, I think what's specific to District 6 is specific to a whole district. You have to look at a whole district. You can't take a piece of the pie out because it's a whole pie. We have some schools that are doing really well, and we have some schools that are struggling. That's district-wide. We need to help those schools as when the test scores came out, and, of course, the media didn't make a big deal about that. But a lot of our schools really went up. Some of our schools, all the schools in District 6 are Title I schools except Mail and Audubon. And so we are now looking at, since the test scores came out, what are we now going to be able to do to give them more resources? What are we going to do to be able to help those schools get where they are? But people don't realize where they come from. We have 107 different languages. We have 10,000 homeless children who come in and they are not prepared. So that's the reason I'm on my passion for early childhood. We have to get them young. We have to get them early so that they can be successful and we won't have to remediate them. And so we are doing all those kinds of things to help to have the classroom be a place where people can teach. On the 20-to-1, we heard a smaller class size that, you know, they say it have to really be smaller than that to be effective. We've had a lot of research on that too, smaller classes. But we're putting a lot more help into the schools, and a lot of schools have resource teachers that come in and help with math or whatever the problem is that the kids are struggling with. That's the reason we saw them up to the 51 percentile this year.
Ms. Wohler, same question. Issues specific to District 6.
District 6 is a really exciting district because it's so diverse. It's diverse in all kinds of ways. Dr. Hargens got it exactly right after the unbridled learning results came out when she said it's not okay for some of our schools to be successful and others to not be successful. And unfortunately, too many of our schools in District 6 are not successful. We've got schools ranging from the 99th all the way down to the 8th percentile. I thought it was 9th, but it's actually 8th. Only 4 of our 16 District 6 schools have reached proficiency or beyond. Of the 75% of the schools still in the needs improvement category, just over half of those are progressing. There are wonderful things happening in terms of the diversity that we've just heard about. At Hartstern Elementary, where 25% of their students are English language learners, the principal, Dwan Wright, greets every child in their home language when they walk in the school. We can't use diversity as an excuse for our schools not to be doing better. I've been walking all around this district. It's a large district. I've been knocking on a lot of doors. And what I'm hearing from parents, from grandparents, and from children who've come out and talked with me on their porches, that they're concerned about their schools. They care deeply about their schools, and they want their District 6 schools to be as good as any school in this system. When our District 6 schools aren't performing well, it affects the entire system.
Staying with you, up to 1 minute to answer this question, how can the voters of District 6 trust that you will vote in their best interest?
As a psychologist, I'm big on listening. And when I've been going to people's doors, I've been doing more listening than talking, and I have learned a lot. They can trust me to vote in their best interests because I will engage with them, I will be available to them, I will listen to them, and obviously not every voter is going to agree on every issue. I will make myself available for forums, for conversations, so that we can come to consensus about what's the best approach to improve our schools in District 6 and for the whole school system.
And Ms. Haddad, how can the voters of District 6 trust that you will vote in their best interest?
Well, they've trusted me for a long time, and they know the kind of service I give. They can call me, they email me, and I'm there for them. I answer all their questions. They need to know that somebody really cares about them, and they know I do. And I think that people want to know that people care about them, and I have done that for a long time. And people will call me and say, thank you. I'll see somebody out. And they'll say, oh, I remember you did this for me. And I have forgotten that I had done it. But they say, you have done this for me, and we really appreciate it. I've worked with the daycare centers to get them transportation. And they say, oh, well, I would have had to quit work because I couldn't have got my child from school. So I get a lot of those calls, and I take it very seriously. And I talk to people. And, I mean, I've been very involved.
A next question, up to 2 minutes, and this is for you, Ms. Haddad. Explain a decision by the board that you voted against the majority and why you voted against the majority in that decision.
Well, last year I did on the taxes because I felt like we didn't need to raise the taxes. For the most part, I think the board works well together. We talk through things. We have work sessions, so we do work well together. And we may not always agree, but I think we try to work well together. But I think the taxes is the one issue that last year was really kind of contentious. But I had talked to the people in the community, not just in my district, but all over, and said, the recession has hit us hard. We have not recovered. We cannot afford to pay more taxes. And so that was that's the one I voted against. But I don't try to be in there and be obnoxious. I think you need to work as a team. And that's what I try to do. And like I said, I don't always agree, but, you know, you try to work together because that's important that we all work together.
Same question, Ms. Woolner. A decision that the board made that you might have voted against the majority.
It's hard since I don't have the years of experience on the board, haven't had the opportunity to vote with the board. I also followed the tax issue last year. There was a 4% increase on the table, and they ended up going with a smaller percentage. I think that demonstrated the fact that they did not need those funds. I think I, too, would have opposed, would have voted against, would have stood up for no tax increase at last year's budget session.
And sticking with you, up to two minutes for this question. How do you balance the support that you must give your constituents and the votes that you must make for your constituents versus the whole district?
Well, I think that what's good for District 6 is good for the whole district. We've got broad diversity within District 6. And if it's good for District 6, it's going to be good for the district. If District 6 is struggling, that's not good for the district. I don't see it as an either or. I think this is part of the systems thinking that I mentioned earlier. We're not taking from one part of the district to feed the other. We need to think systemically as an entire system. And if our District 6 schools are struggling, if there are huge disparities within District 6, then that's a problem for the entire district. So I don't see any inconsistencies there.
And Ms. Haddad, how do you balance that? And you mentioned a little bit earlier, but if you care to expand.
Yeah, well, I do listen to my constituents, but what it comes down to is what's best for kids. That's the bottom line. And people will agree and disagree with you on that. And they do in my district sometimes, but then I sit and explain to them why I did it. Because it's in the best interest of the kids, and that's who we're here about. We're not here about the adults, we're here about the kids. And what are we gonna do to make every one of them successful? They all need to achieve and graduate prepared to go into the world. And that's, you know, that is our focus. And that's how I make my votes. It's what's good for the kids.
Ms. Haddad, up to 2 minutes for this question. Have you read the JCPS budget? What will be your process, or what is your process, to determine if it's a good budget for JCPS, and what changes would you recommend, if any?
Well, over the years, I've read the budget a lot. Now, I can't recite it for you if you want me to, the $1.3 billion, but I have read it. And we have our CFO, Cordelia. Over the years, I've worked with a lot of CFOs, and she is undoubtedly the best one we've worked with. She makes it simple for you to understand. She puts it in layman's terms that you can understand, and I like that. We have asked a lot of questions over the years. It wasn't just this year that we asked questions. She has changed the budget over the years for us. We have a financial system called Munis, which has really been a pain, and it's really taken a long time for it to get in place. That's the reason some of the things in the budget weren't where they are now, is because when you try to put a personnel in as big a district as this is, get it all in the computer, and everybody make sure they get their paychecks. That's a hard job to do. But now we can look at it, and she has made it so that, and the board members have asked questions, how can you get it in deep? How can you be transparent? Can the public get on that? We now have the software that the public can get on there and look it down in there and see what each school spends and how they're spending it. And so it's really good that you can have that. And I've worked with the audits. I've served on the audit committee with the outside auditors, met with the inside auditors a long time ago. We don't do that as much anymore, but I've met with the outside auditors. And the superintendent and Cordelia have a business group that meets every once in a while on a Saturday. So I had the privilege of meeting with them, some of them from Humana, GE, and other places, working with us to look at the budget and see how we can do it better. But we're always looking, benchmarking all the time. For years, we've benchmarked. Now, we didn't use the benchmarks the auditor wanted us to use, but we have been benchmarking over the years because you have to with a district this size.
And Ms. Molnar, because this is lengthy questions, I'll read it again. How have you read the JCPS budget? What will be your process to determine if it's a good budget for JCPS, and would you recommend any changes?
I have read the budget booklet. I encourage everyone to take a look at it and to compare it to budgets that have been presented in the past. It is a startling difference because budgets are not just about numbers. Budgets tell stories. Budgets tell an organization's priorities and an organization's values. And past budgets, children do need to be the center of our world at JCPS. They do need to be at the center of everything that this district does, and the budget did not reflect that. We now have a version of a budget that starts to tell a story, that shows trend data for the first time, and that was as a direct result of some of the newer board members taking the audit seriously and asking for change and continuing to ask for change until they got it. So we are beginning to get a picture of how the funds are actually being spent, how the funds are actually being committed to school councils in an equitable fashion. What it's raising new questions now about the accountability for the school councils to show how they are using those funds and what results they're getting. So yes, I'm very pleased, and kudos to Cordelia for responding to the new board members' call for a different way of presenting a budget, of showing how the funds are being directed, and raising a whole new set of questions that the new board will be able to ask going forward.
And staying with you, up to 2 minutes to answer this question. Do you support the Common Core standards, Kentucky Core Academic Standards that we've adopted?
I'm a fan of the Kentucky standards. I think that these standards are really important. Unlike some of the earlier assessment approaches that focus just on math and reading, of course we need to continue to focus on math, we need to continue focus on reading, but we also need to look at social studies, we also need to look at sciences, we also need to look at arts and humanities, and not just how students are scoring on one particular test, but what standards they need to be meeting. What is it that we expect a second grader to know, a fourth grader to know, an eighth grader to know? And so this is really, really important work. I think that's why we're seeing the Kentucky Department of Education is doing fantastic work, and we're seeing increases in scores, not only in JCPS, but across the state of Kentucky, and that's really very, very exciting. I think we need to continue to give teachers support and training as they're learning how to implement these standards effectively, but I think that there's great things happening in education in the state of Kentucky.
Same question, Ms. Haddad.
Yeah. Before I say that, I just want everybody to know that for years we've had trend data. It's in every budget we've ever had, 5 to 10 years, and everybody wants it presented differently. What people don't understand, every board member processes differently. They need different information to make different decisions. This district has always had 5 and 10 year plans, so I don't want the public to think that all of a sudden we just now have trend data. It's in a maybe a way that one person might like it better, but we've always had it. I think the Common Core standards are wonderful. Kentucky was the first state to adopt it. That was good because it gave us a baseline. And so I think it let the schools get ready and know the subjects that they had to have when they were going to come in. We've had since 1990, I think this is the fifth test we've had. I don't know how the teachers do it and the principals. I think it would just drive me crazy because they think one thing's good and then they try something else. But I think the Common Core are the standards that are going to be here for a while. They go in depth. They look like when I went to school many years ago, that you learned everything at one time. You know, when my son started school, the multiplication tables were spread over 3 years. I said, what in the world's going on? So now they get it in depth, and that's what kids need. They need to have that strong foundation so that as they go along, it will be easier at each grade as they go along. So I hear a lot of positives about it. We're giving a lot of PD, not just to the teachers, but also to the principals, because time has really changed. Principalship has changed drastically over the years. So to have the best results in the schools, we have to be sure everybody gets trained.
Up to 2 minutes for this next question. Do you support the JCPS busing and school choice plan that's currently in place? Ms. Haddad.
Yes, I've been through them all. I've seen it all. And I have to say, I think this is the best plan that we've had in all the years that we've had it. This is not the 75 plan that people think that you're just, you know, transporting them just to have something to do. By state law, if a child lives a mile from school, you have to transport them. It's really transporting rather than busing. But we have 13 clusters, and the clusters are closer to home. But you know, in this district, what's so interesting, people love choice. 45% of our students choose to go to different schools, not their neighborhood schools. My grandchildren in all their years never went to a neighborhood school because they saw a program. So we have so many good programs that they want to go to another school. So that has really worked out for us. I really like this plan, and I think it's sustainable, and it's predictable. And there are people that, and 90% of the people get their first or second choice. So that tells you that it's pretty stable. And some people don't like their school, so we work with them. And if they have several family members, my time will start getting busy now because registration is starting for the high schools. Where do I go? What do I do? And I love helping people. I can't tell you how many people I help every year to give them guidance and then tell them, you know, what to look for and what they want to do. So we had a showcase, and about 10,000 people came. When we first started it, everybody was saying, that's your job to tell us where we go to school. Now people are saying, we want to be involved. And to me, that's a kind of a parental involvement, because parents are coming and looking out for wanting to know where the kids are going to school. And though for those students who can't, we go to them. We take buses there. We're trying to do more things to get them involved in school. And then, of course, the early childhood. But we want them to register early, not wait till the day of school, so they can be settled when they start to school.
Same question. Do you support the current system in place with the busing and the school choice system that JCPS has?
I think we are moving in the right direction. We've made the bus rides shorter, and that's absolutely right that this is a district of choice. Many parents choose magnet programs or five-star programs that fit their child's unique learning needs, and I think that's really important. I think we need to get at the stories behind the choices, because what I'm hearing door-to-door is from parents is that some of them are choosing schools because they want to send their child to a great school. Some of them are choosing schools because they wouldn't feel right sending their child to their reside schools. So we need to make sure that all of our schools are great schools. We need to have more great schools across this district. We can't use diversity, we can't use poverty as an excuse for not having more great schools in District 6. There are too many examples of high-performing, high-poverty schools, and I think we can do more so that school choice is always to get the child in the unique learning environment and not to escape a bad school assignment.
Sticking with you, just can we spend a minute just talking about how we would balance our personal lives and other work duties with being a school board member? 1 minute.
Sure. Well, for years I've raised two children and worked two jobs, and most mothers can relate to what that's like. It's always a juggling act and a balancing act. My children, one is in graduate school, one is in college, out of state. I continue to work for the Kentucky Psychological Association. I do teach at Bellarmine, And I've been juggling for years. I no longer have very, very busy and engaged children's schedules to juggle. And I've learned to manage my time well over the years.
And Ms. Haddad, in just about a minute, if you can.
Yeah, I won't have a problem at all. I never have because I don't have those responsibilities. I love what I do. I'm very involved in it, putting a lot of time every single week. I visit schools, not just my schools, but other schools. I get involved. I've gotten people involved. I like to work with the community also. We've gotten the Parklands. I met with them and the museum and the Louisville Nature Center and the Kentucky Historical Society to bring the community into the schools. And that's what I really like to do. So we've gotten a lot of them that are coming into the schools and working with the schools, because the community has to understand the schools belong to them too. It doesn't just belong to the superintendent and the board.
Next question, up to 2 minutes. What's your opinion of the relationship with the Jefferson County Teachers Association and Union with the school board and the school district as a whole?
Well, over the years, it has come and gone. It has changed. For the most part, we do try to get along. We don't always agree. There's some things they do that I can't vote for, or that they want that I can't vote for. But we really do try to have to work together, because it's not about what we want or don't want. It's what's good for kids and what's good for the schools and what's going to help teachers to be successful in the classrooms. This last contract we had, I think, was a good contract. The teachers now have to use Parent Portal to get in touch with parents, which had been missing, which I think is really important. Also that teachers, the principal can choose for more teachers, you know, to fill a position. So we worked well together this last time to make sure that it's about the schools. And we have to understand, we have to respect each other, but it's not about the adults. It's about what's good for the schools and what's good for the kids.
Thank you. Up to 2 minutes, if you can, your opinion on the relationship between the teachers union and either the school board and both the school district.
Our public schools do have to be all about our children, all about student achievement, all about preparing children for life and for college and career. And the central ingredient of that is great teaching. So it's really critical that we have a school district that is able to attract and retain top quality talent, and JCPS has an excellent record for that. It's important that teachers have a voice in the conversation, that when decisions are made, teachers are going to be the ones who implement those decisions, and they need to be part of the conversation from the beginning. If the board is handing down decisions from on high without conversation with the teachers, with the teachers' representatives, then the chances of those policies succeeding are very, very slim. But if teachers are at the table from the beginning, I believe the board and the teachers can work together with the community, with families, for the very, very best outcomes for our students.
Up to 2 minutes, what's your understanding of what makes a good school board member?
School board members oversee a very large budget. School board members evaluate and hire the superintendent. School board members evaluate the strategic plan and work toward that strategic plan. So I think school board members need to be able to take a sky-high view of the system, to take a look at the data, to take a look at how we're progressing toward meeting our goals. Need to think critically at all times. We can't just accept reports that are handed to us and rubber stamp them. We need to have our critical thinking caps on all the time. I think that's incredibly important. School board member also needs to listen to the community, pay attention to what's happening in the schools, listen to the parents, to the teachers, to the broader community, to listen to the stakeholders, and balance that with that sky-high view of what's happening in the system.
Thank you. Ms. Haddad, your understanding of what makes a good school board member?
Well, I think a good school board member is someone who is committed and has the passion to be there and do the work for and to make every kid successful. And I think also we do hire and evaluate the superintendent. That's the biggest job that we have. We do not micromanage administration. That is strictly up to the superintendent. But I think the most important thing is, for me, over the years, what I have seen is works more successfully is when the board works as a team with the superintendent. That is crucial, because if we are, and I've been on boards where it hasn't always been that way, There's a lot of fighting, and I don't think that's going on right now. We're not always agreeing on things, but at least we work together, we listen to each other, and but that is, in fact, the most important thing, that you can work together with other people. You listen to what other people have to say, and you listen to the community. But when you're sitting at the board making a decision and the staff giving you the recommendations and you talk through them and you listen to what's being said and you ask good questions, which we do, but working together as a team, that sets a standard for the community. I know in the past, the board members have been really taken down because the board didn't get along. And so we don't do that anymore. And it's not always easy to do, but we do work together.
Up to 2 minutes for this next question. Since Superintendent Hargens has been here, the central office administration has been under a microscope. Are you satisfied with where the central office is and the changes that they've made? Does it need to go further? Your thoughts, Ms. Haddad?
When people said the 300 administrators in central office, that's wrong. I had to tell the auditor that they didn't understand that. 152 administrators, but they're like in a big company, they would be your middle management. They're the ones that give the support and help to the schools. The principals and assistant principals and the counselors in the schools, those are the ones that are making over the $100,000 you're talking about. But we pay well, and we should pay well. The difference is if we paid teachers for 260 days instead of 187, we have 2,000 teachers who would make over $100,000, and as well they should. It's a profession. They've gone to school. I don't understand why people put them down, because that's hard. They have, you know, they have to go get their master's, and they have to go get their other things. And a lot of the people in central office are teachers, too. But they know their craft, and they go back, and they get continuing education. So I think where we are is a good place to be, and we're putting more, like I said, we put assistant principals and out in the schools and the Goal Clarity coaches. So we are putting the money where it needs to be, and I think central office, you have to have central office. If you don't have people that can help the schools with curriculum and instruction and with finance and with legal, you're going to be in trouble because the superintendent can't do all that.
Thank you. Your thoughts on the central office and where it's at?
Well, 6 months since the audit, we still don't know. What we've heard from the district is that the auditor's numbers were wrong, that the auditor got it completely wrong, but we've still not seen reports that reconcile what JCPS is doing in terms of central office with what the auditor found. And I think that the onus is still on JCPS at this point to explain these discrepancies in ways that the board members and the public can understand it and digest it. And so until we see a full accounting of how those central office expenses are handled, until we have an accounting of how the folks working in central office, how what they do connects with student achievement and student success, we really don't know the answer. So while we're making strides in terms of transparency, there is more work to be done before we'll have a clear answer to that question.
Thank you. Up to 2 minutes for this question. Is there too much emphasis on test scores in school, in public schools?
Well, you know, I'm a teacher, and you have to have test scores to know how your students are doing. I think it's really important that we test our kids. I gave my students back a test today, and some of them weren't so happy about it, but it helped me know where they are in their learning and what I need to do differently to make sure, or what they need to do differently as we partner together so that they get the content and the concepts that they need to get. I think it's really important. I do think that we need to have a focus on holistic assessment, so we're not looking at just one, you know, simple test score and that gives us the answer to how well we're doing. I think there are a variety of factors that need to be taken into consideration. As a psychologist, when psychologists do assessments, they are looking at the person or the organization they're assessing in a holistic way, recognizing that there are many, many factors at play, and I believe we need to assess our schools in exactly that holistic way.
Thank you. Ms. Haddad, emphasis on test scores, is it too much, just right, too little?
I think when it first started back in 1990, that caused the biggest problem because the media made it look like you had bad schools. And today she's still talking about us having bad schools. That sets me off on a different course because that is not really what it is. there's a lot of pressure on the test scores. There's a lot of pressure on the schools. From what I hear from teachers and principals, that they don't feel like they really have time to teach because they're so busy testing kids. And I think they need to know where they are on a daily basis. But I don't think at kindergarten now, we're putting so much pressure on them for testing. But the pressure is coming from the state. The kids have to be where they have to be. So I do think a lot of pressure is put on them. And I think that we need to not put as much on them and let them teach. And then the kids will get it, you know. And they say they used to teach to the test. And, you know, that's not good. That's not good teaching. But I think the Common Core standards changed a whole lot of that. But it is a lot of pressure.
This will be the last questions, then we'll go to closing statements. This comes from the audience. Some students state they do not feel safe on the way to school, at school, and after school on the way home, so it's easier just to miss school sometimes. How would you address this issue to close the gap and help get these students safely to and from school and, I guess, safety at school as well, ensure that there's safety at school?
Well, I would like to know who these children are. And do they ride to school? Do they walk to school? Do they not feel safe on the bus? Because they can all that can be reported to the school. If a child's feeling like they're not safe, they need to let the school know that they don't feel like they're safe, and they need to let their parents know, and the parents need to let us know if that's happening. On the way to school, I don't know, do they mean on a bus, or do they mean they're walking to school? You know, but our schools are safe. I think the event at Fern Creek showed that we do have practices in place for such an event, and they handled it perfectly. And so those things are going to happen. Look in the community. That's all you hear every day. It's happening in the community, not just in the schools. But we do, and I would like to know who that is who doesn't feel safe, because we need to know that so that we can make some changes for the kid.
Same question.
Children aren't learning if they don't feel safe, and our schools must be safe places for them, and mostly they are. And that should include from the moment they step onto the bus or they're on their way to school, students have to be safe. I actually agree with Ms. Haddad. If students are not feeling safe, they need to let adults know. We need to understand what that's about. If we need to have more adults on the bus and figure out how we keep students feeling safe, then that's what we need to do, because it's not acceptable for a child to leave his or her home in the morning and feel threatened on the way to school. That's not a setup for positive learning.
And so closing statements, we do have time for them. 2 minutes. Again, you'll get a sound of the buzzer at minute 30, and we will start with you, Ms. Woolner.
Okay. Thank you again for this opportunity. Change is needed in District 6. Only 4 of our 16 schools in District 6 have reached proficiency. These schools are struggling. Dr. Hargens is absolutely on the right track. She needs an ally who will be forward-looking, not thinking about how we've done it in the past. We need to make progress. These are not bad schools. These are schools with good kids and concerned parents and hardworking teachers. We need to figure out the strategies to make these improvements. The Envision Equity Report, kindergarten readiness data, all point to huge disparities in our District 6 schools. The Envision Equity Report highlights that literacy levels are at the lowest in District 6, and that is just not acceptable. We need a stronger advocate for this district on the school board now. I have a lifetime of classroom experience, executive leadership. I'm a psychologist with expertise in child and adolescent development. I've been in the schools as an active participant. I believe I have a unique and valuable perspective to bring. There has been a community-wide call for change on the school board. I responded to that call when I got into this race, as did John DeFazio, who has since withdrawn from the race and has thrown his support to me, seeing my candidacy as the best opportunity for change in the District 6 seat. I encourage voters to do their homework, to take a look at my website, wilnerforschoolboard.com, to read up on these issues, to pay attention, and to consider voting for change this November 4th.
Thank you so much, Ms. Haddad. 2 minutes.
Thank you. I guess I'm just getting a little tired of her talking about how bad District 6 schools are. Those children come to school every day with challenges, and the people in those schools work very hard every single day to make it work for those kids. To label schools like that just sends me off the deep end. I don't think anybody needs to be on the school board who just talks badly about the schools. We know we have challenges, and we have challenges that we're facing. We're giving the schools more, and to talk about kids and teachers like that just is not appropriate. I have been on the board for a long time. I'm not hearing the same call she's hearing because there's a few that have endorsed her. I'm not hearing this call all over the community for me to be removed. In fact, just the opposite. I have people saying they're glad that I'm on there. We need experience on this board. There is no experience on this board anymore because 2 years ago, we lost Joe Hardesty, who had 22 years, and the other two board members had 12 years. We did a study on ourselves this year and said the reason that we were in the middle on being a good school board was because we had stability. We need stability. Changing it, we don't work in the schools. That is the superintendent and the staff's job. But to talk about them like that, I don't know that people would want them represented when you're out there talking about them. I go out there and help when I can help. I visit with them and I address their needs when they need to, but I do that all over. I have been a good board member. I've been a great board member, and I give it the time and the energy and the passion it takes. I'm on the early childhood. We've got to work to get these kids taken care of, but we all have to do it together. We can't sit here and start talking about how bad they are, but what are we going to do to make a change? The community needs to get involved. As I told GLI, you can't just be sitting out there throwing ads in the paper. You need to get in here and help us like the old GLI used to do. They used to be in here and be involved in the people that are working against me. All their kids went to private schools, so they don't have a clue about what's needed in public schools. Thank you.
Thank you so much to Lisa Wilner and Carol Haddad. Round of applause, if we may. And Heather?